Nuketown Radioactive number 84 for Saturday, February 5th, 2011. Good news, everyone. Nuketown Radioactive isn't dead, and neither is Futurama. On this episode of Radioactive, I catch up on a year's worth of happenings, talk about my new Picture of a Day project, and take a look at some of the computer games I've been playing during the hiatus. Then in Netheads, I uncover the Race for the Galaxy AI card game and Mutant Future, a science fiction RPG inspired by Gamma World. Welcome to Nuketown Radioactive. I am your host, Ken Newquist, and this is the occasional podcast about life, liberty, and the pursuit of geekdom. And it would be, well, not unsurprising if you'd kind of forgotten all this stuff because, well, it's been a really long time since the podcast was last released. I think the last one was actually in March of 2010, which means it's been almost a year since the last podcast came out, which is really sad and probably the longest hiatus that Nuketown Radioactive has ever seen. The reasons for this are, well, you know, they're pretty much the reasons you would expect. Things get busy. And I gotta say, I think the thing, it's not just that things get busy, it's that being creative or even just doing the podcast, it's not that the podcast is an especially creative endeavor, but it takes time to put stuff together, you know, there's work involved. It's hard to do that when you're just really tired at the end of the day and you're dealing with, you know, kids and work and all of that. And you come back home and you sit down and you're like, wow, I could do the podcast or I could have a beer and play some Dragon Age. But, you know, more and more recently I've been really missing some of the things that I was doing before, some of my hobbies that fell by the wayside, and really the creative outlet that, well, Nuketown has always provided. And even just, not even just creative, but the opportunity to try out new things, try out new code, try out new projects, you know, those are the things that I just haven't had the energy to do. I haven't had the discipline to do either, just because, like I say, it can be a lot easier to come home and just veg after you've gotten through putting the kids to bed, checking homework, going to soccer, going to softball, going to all the other things that could possibly happen. And, you know, I gotta say, it's also been a pretty intense year. There's been an awful lot that's happened over the last couple of months. We unfortunately lost our dog, Madison. She died back in June, and that was really hard. We went from a household of, well, let's see, two dogs and three cats down to one cat, one scaredy cat who really didn't want to come out and actually be all that friendly. Now, that has changed, actually. Once she's become the only cat, Sarah has decided that, hey, you know, she actually does need attention and she'll come down and see us occasionally, but it's not the same as having a dog. We spent most of the summer, well, actually, we spent the entire summer without a dog. We spent a good chunk of the fall without a dog. And, oh man, it really affected me. You know, it's nice when you can come home from work and there is someone who is always happy to see you. You know, it doesn't matter if, you know, the kids are mad because they were making them do their homework or your spouse just isn't all giggles and smiles, but that dog will always be happy to see you. So it was just, you know, it was just sad to not have Maddie around anymore. And this fall, actually on Thanksgiving, we ended up getting a new Labrador Retriever. It's a yellow lab named Indiana, and if you've been following Nuketown, then you would probably be aware of this stuff. He's a very cute puppy. We got him and he was about, I think about 7 weeks old, 8 weeks old, and he was very, very cute. He is much more laid back than Madison ever was, especially at this age. And he's just a good dog. Now, he's gotten into kind of the adolescent age for puppies. You know, he's around 4.5 months old, and he thinks it's hilarious to grab gloves and mittens and hats and then run away from you and stuff like that. But I think he's a very trainable dog, and he's been learning the basic commands like sit and come and down and that kind of stuff. And I think that in another couple of months, once he burns off some of his frantic puppy energy, he's going to be a really fantastic dog. And I have to say, it's been awesome having a puppy again. We hadn't had a puppy for, oh, wow, 14 years, and it's been a really long time since we had a puppy. And I remembered how much work it is, but I also, you know, the thing that you forget, especially after we've had old dogs for a while. I mean, my Labrador was almost 14. Our German Shepherd was, I think, 14 or 15. You know, they don't do the same things. They don't move the same way as puppies do. Puppies are constantly full of energy. And like kids, sometimes that could be a little more energy than you're ready to deal with. But on the other hand, oh, it's invigorating. It's just, it's awesome to come home and be able to wrestle with the dog and burn off some stress. There is nothing, my friends, nothing at all like puppy licks to just just melt away the anxiety and stress of a really busy day. So let's see, what else happened over the last year? I went back to Lake Champlain, not once, but twice, which was really cool. We hung out with our friends on Butler Island on Lake Champlain. I got to make a serious dent in my summer reading list, and maybe I'll go back and revisit the summer reading list so I can talk about some of the books I've been reading over the last couple of months. But, you know, as always, it was just great to kind of unplug and hang out with the family and kids, read, take a nap. You know, what a radical concept, you know, take a nap. There was a downside in that we went in August the second time, and a massive storm just came up the lake, and the waves were ridiculously high. We're talking like 5 or 6 foot waves. We actually had to go out and tie down the boat to make sure it didn't get away, the boat and the dock to make sure it didn't get taken away. And then it took a couple of days for the water to finally calm down. And our friends couldn't get us off the island, actually. Their boat just was not up to the challenge. So what we ended up doing was going down to some of their neighbors a few camps down, and they had a nice fiberglass boat, and they were able to get us off. But I think we left about 2 or 3 days late getting off the island, which, you know, normally wouldn't be a big deal, but I work at a college. We were just about ready to launch the new college website. I had a lot of work that needed to be done to, you know, kind of finalize things. Oh, and the start of the semester was looming large. So it was a great vacation, but it was also just a wee bit stressful. So the other big news, especially if you know me, is that I got a smartphone. I got an iPhone 4, which is kind of astounding for me. And the reason why is because I have had a craptacular phone, just a simple Motorola flip phone with a pay-as-you-go plan for, I don't know, like the last 3 or 4 years. I have never had a phone that was even the slightest bit intelligent. You know, I mean, I think at one point I had it syncing over Bluetooth with my address book, which was handy, but, you know, upgrades come along, and the next thing you know, the phone's not syncing right. My phone would crash. Even though my phone was as dumb as a brick, there were times where I couldn't get it to boot. I have to pop the battery out. I mean, it was just a pain in the butt. So in December, I finally got a new phone, a really cool phone. And admittedly, you know, there's a price that comes with this, not just in terms of the phone, but in terms of the data plan and stuff. It has been fantastic. I really, really enjoy having the phone. Now, I don't actually talk on it nearly as much as people might normally do on a phone. I find that most of what I use the iPhone for is work-related stuff. And a lot of that tends to be, you know, email, doing research when I'm on meetings or on the road or whatever, keeping up basically with what's happening at work. I mean, that's really why I have the phone in the first place. But the other cool thing about it is now I have the ability to play with some apps, which is, it's just a whole new world, you know? And I think this has been surprising for some of my friends because, well, the friends who don't work with me every day, because they kind of assume, well, you know, Ken, he's a web programmer, you know, he's around computers continuously. How could he have a phone that's as ridiculously stupid as the one that he had? How could this be his first smartphone? And the answer is basically, I didn't really need it. You know, I could get by with what I had because most of the time, you know, I walk to work. I have about 15 minutes between my home and my office, and I didn't really need it that much. I could get by. But, you know, with the way things at work have been for the last couple of months, it has been very handy to be able to stay in touch. Now, it does make you a bit more frantic. It makes you a bit more connected. I don't know that necessarily makes you more frantic, but you have to be careful with it. You know, it's very possible to fall into that kind of standard smartphone pose where, you know, whenever you have 5 free seconds, you bring out the phone and you start playing, I don't know, Angry Birds or posting something to Twitter or checking into Foursquare or whatever. So I've been trying to not fall into that trap. I know that I do it, but my goal has been to not make the phone, you know, my life. I don't text that much. Like I say, I don't talk on it continuously, but I do love the ability to be out with friends and somebody says, oh, well, who was in that particular movie? And you whip out IMDb and boom, you know the answer to that question. It's pretty cool. Now, other happenings over the last year. Well, this isn't actually something that I did, but it was cool nonetheless, which was the return of Futurama. After going off the air in 2002 and releasing a series of movies straight to DVD, it came back on Comedy Central with season 6 in 2010. We got 13 episodes last year, including a new Christmas episode, which was really good. And we'll get another 13 in 2011. Beyond that, no one really knows. The last thing I heard about it was it wasn't looking like they were going to renew for another season beyond that, but hell, I'm just happy to get 26 more episodes. And just have Futurama back on TV every week was just really cool. And I gotta say, the episodes were actually funny. So I'm looking forward to the new season coming out on DVD so I can rewatch those episodes and maybe I can dedicate a little more episode or a little more of Nuketown Radioactive to talking about it. But if you haven't seen Futurama, or at least the new season of Futurama, I would recommend going and checking it out. You don't really need to know much about the series to get into it. And if you are into the series, well, I think you'll appreciate what they did with it. So I did start a new project this year, and you may be wondering, well, Ken, if you're saying you don't have enough time to do the podcast, or at least the energy to do the podcast, how the heck are you launching into a new project? And the answer to that is, well, it's kind of the same reason why I'm recording this podcast right now. I'm just trying to get back into the creative swing of things. And, well, you know, I also wanted to experiment with my new phone. So what's the project? It is Picture a Day, or Picture of the Day, or it's got a couple of different names. But in any case, the whole idea is that you take a picture a day, and then you post it to the web every day. Now, I gotta say, I'm not that consistent. I'm probably about a week behind in terms of photos, and I may take several photos in a given day and then post them over the next 2 or 3 days. But the idea is that you're documenting your life. It's a day in the life of Ken. And, you know, it serves a couple of different purposes. The first is just to experiment with my camera more. I have a Nikon D60. It's a pretty cool camera. It has a lot of capabilities, and I've only touched on really a handful of them. I also have a new iPhone, as I mentioned, and the cool thing about the iPhone 4 is that it has a really decent camera in it. I mean, you can take some good shots. Now, they're not as good as what you might get on the D60, but here's the thing. My wife and I share the D60, and she needs to occasionally use it for her business, which means I can't really take it with me to work every day. My phone, however, well, that's with me almost continuously. And I'm using both to experiment with, you know, different ways of basically getting media out there. So I've posted photos from my phone using Facebook and using the Flickr app. I've offloaded them onto my Mac and uploaded them to those various destinations using iPhoto and, you know, just kind of playing around with different options, playing around with editing, that kind of thing. The other thing that I found perhaps more interesting than taking photos has been the way that it documents your life. You know, I don't need to have every moment of my life caught on audio and video and photograph, but it's interesting in that, you know, you look back over the last month's worth of photos and I can think of exactly where I was when I took that shot. The cool thing about photography is that it requires you to really think about your environment. It forces you to really pay attention to what's going on around you. When you're in the mood, or even just in the groove, once you're doing the picture of a day project, you're constantly thinking about, well, would this make a good shot? Or would this be a good representation of kind of what happened today? And it puts you into a different mindset. I think it makes you a little more observant, and, you know, God knows I could stand to be a little bit more observant. So what I really enjoy about the project is that, first of all, it puts me into this mindset where I'm really looking at my world more than I might normally do. But at the same time, I can look back through these photos and I can think, oh, wow, yeah, I mean, I remember that crazy ice storm. I remember when Indiana could, you know, fit on my lap. You know, I remember everything. And it's pretty cool. It's just a different way of looking back on your life. And although I've only been doing it for a little over a month, I can really see the value in it. Now, I was inspired to do this by a couple of my friends from work who've been doing Photo a Day. One of my friends, Jason, has been doing it for over a year. He's actually onto his second year of Photo a Day. And I'm really impressed with a lot of the shots that they've taken and the discipline that they've shown in taking these pictures every day and keeping the project up. And I have to say that, you know, unlike something like NaNoWriMo, where you write a novel in a month, this is something that's more of an endurance event where you're trying to get those shots every day and you're trying to maintain it over the course of a year. And I like the creativity that's included in it, and I like the discipline that's included in it. And what can I say? It's really just satisfying an itch. So there are three ways you can keep up with this project. You can follow me on Facebook, you can follow me on Flickr, and you can follow me on Twitter. Links to all of those will be in the show notes.
If you need help with your master plan, check out rpgpodcast.com.
So one of the things I've been doing while I haven't been podcasting is playing video games, and actually, I gotta be honest, I haven't really been playing that many video games either. I've had these kind of long droughts for the last couple of months where I haven't really been able to play video games at all just because of, well, the whole time thing. It just sucks, really. When you think about, you know, how I used to freelance game reviews and write freelance game reviews, and I would play three or four games in a month, to go down to playing no games in a month is really just kind of, I don't know, it's a world of difference for me. I'm sure my wife enjoys it, but alas, you know, occasionally I do get that itch to get back to playing some video games, and I've had some good games to play, and some not-so-good ones. The big game of 2010 for me was Mass Effect 2 on the Xbox 360. It was an epic space opera follow-up to BioWare's original Mass Effect. It downplayed the RPG elements with weapon loadouts, like Modern Warfare or some other shooter, and there was no inventory system, but it was still a lot of fun, and honestly, it's the closest you'll come to playing kind of like the big action popcorn movie of the summer. The really nice thing about it was that it was set up in sort of anthology mode, so the idea is that you go around and you're collecting a team to go and take on the big bad at the end of the game, which really isn't all that different. You know, there's a lot of games that have followed that. But I think what Mass Effect did best was make each one of those missions really compelling. And the nice thing about it for me, at least as a geek dad, was that I could sit down and I could play through one of those missions. It might take me about 5 hours, but I could have a nice self-contained adventure and then maybe not play for a week or two, come back, do it again. I didn't constantly feel like I had to be keeping up with this overarching story, you know, this massive, just expansive story that I could never really get back into because I just didn't have the time. I really made an effort of finishing that game in 2010, and I have to say, it was good. I mean, I don't know that the ending was quite as good as the original Mass Effect. The original Mass Effect had a really good punch to its conclusion, but this was a good bridge game, and I'm literally looking forward to Mass Effect 3. Now, another space opera game I played was Infinite Space, which was a game for the Nintendo DS, which lets you buy starships and ultimately command a fleet of up to 5 vessels. It was a Japanese RPG, so naturally the protagonist was a 16-year-old boy out to save the universe. You know, initially I thought it was going to be pretty cool, because you could build out your ships, you could assign cargo spaces, you know, you could have all this equipment and create these really, really customized ships, but the combat was basically rock, scissors, paper. And while there was a lot of customization, it ultimately just didn't make up for the fact that combat was really basic. And even though it was so basic, I ultimately got bogged down in an almost impossible battle and just gave up on it. Now, a game for the DS that, wow, I played the heck out of. And by play the heck out of, I mean I probably played it for 80 or 90 hours and I still haven't finished the game, but it is Dragon Quest IX. I started playing the game because one of my friends, Corey, has been a huge fan of the Dragon Quest series. I've never actually played them before because I wasn't a big DS guy growing up, or rather a big Nintendo guy growing up. But man, it was really good. It was a very, very strong RPG with lots of quests, huge amount of customization. You can hook it up with other DSs playing the game to trade maps. And it was just really, really cool. I had a blast with it. It became my go-to DS game for most of the summer. I played a big chunk of it while I was on the island and when I was going to conferences, and I really, really enjoyed it. Now, I don't know why I stopped playing it. I think it was just because I wasn't being on the road as much. I was on the road a lot this summer, and once I got back home, I didn't really need to get back into that game, or maybe I started playing some of the games on the Xbox again. But I know that I've got it waiting for me, and I know that I will eventually get back to playing it. You know, the thing for me with RPGs is that I always really did enjoy those deep, immersive games. You know, like Ultima 4 is probably one of my all-time favorite RPGs. I loved Baldur's Gate and all that kind of stuff. And the problem is, because I know I'm once again, I'm kind of speaking out of both sides of my mouth here, right? Because I was just saying, oh, well, Mass Effect 2 is awesome because you don't have to deal with a huge overarching story and you can just sit down and play it for 5 hours. The difference when you're talking about Dragon Quest is you can take it wherever you are, right? So you've got your DS with you. It's in my messenger bag. I have 15 minutes here or there. I pop it out. I play it for a little bit. I close it again. It's waiting for me whenever I want to get back into it. I'm on the plane for 2 hours. Boom. Knock out Dragon Quest and I'm good to go. So on the DS, it becomes a lot easier, actually, to play these epic fantasy games, you know, with a huge expansive plots. And I really had a lot of fun with it. I think the other cool thing is they do is, although there's way, way too many quests, probably more than I will ever do, the main story moves along at a good enough pace that, like Mass Effect, although it's not this anthology model, it is like you're going to different towns, you can solve the particular problem there, and then move on. You have a sense of accomplishment, and it keeps you in the game. So if you're looking for a good RPG, I strongly recommend Dragon Quest. So the last game I've been playing a lot out of has been Dragon Age. This came out actually before Mass Effect 2. I want to say this actually came out at the tail end of 2009, because I know I talked about it on the podcast back then. And, you know, the thing about Dragon Age, it was pretty much a sleeper hit. You know, it had so-so graphics. People weren't really blown away with that. But the thing that it did have was a really good story, a really compelling story. And yes, once again, you're kind of going around and trying to gather a coalition to fight the big bad at the end of the game, but it really worked. And I think the other cool thing about Dragon Age, I mean, put aside the graphics, was that there are no easy decisions in this game. There's really, really, you know, complex moral choices, and there's consequences that stick with you. And the other cool thing about it is just that, you know, you're playing through this game and bad stuff happens and your character really needs to live with it. Now, I suppose if you wanted to do the whole time machine thing, you could, you know, roll back to a different save. But I think that for me, at least, I liked the idea that I didn't necessarily want to do that. I wanted to play through and see the consequences of my actions. I get betrayed by a party member and now I had to kill him. Okay, well, how's the game going to go forward from there? The town gets destroyed and suddenly I can't go back and get some of the people I was hoping to get. Had no idea that was going to happen. And it created an entirely different game experience for me than from my friends who went into this game hog wild. So I'm still fighting my way through the game, and I think I think I probably have another 5 or 6 hours of game before I'm finished. But man, I very much enjoyed the game, and I very much enjoyed the setting. And I'm looking forward to Dragon Age 2, which, if I remember correctly, is coming out in March 2011. So that's my other impetus. I really wanted to get through Dragon Age as well as its downloadable. Well, actually, I guess it was a for sale expansion. You might have been able to download it, but I know they also had it in stores, called Awakening. And I just wanted to knock that stuff out before Dragon Age 2 came out. The other thing that I find is that although I have been on a huge science fiction kick for the last 2 years, it kind of got me interested in fantasy again. I don't know that I want to give up my weekly Star Wars game in order to play Dragon Age, but it did get me to buy Green Ronin's Dragon Age RPG, which just arrived in the mail today. And, you know, it was good. It got me wanting to fight dragons again. And, you know, I could see maybe going back to the Dragon Age setting after we're done with our Star Wars RPG, our pen and paper RPG, and maybe playing a little Dragon Age. I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Hello, I'm Tom Baker. You may know me as a doctor from Doctor Who. I just popped by to say go listen to Yogg Radio, the Cthulhu podcast from YoggSotho.com. It's the only show that gives me the willies. Mind you, I rather like that. Cthulhu Fatiga.
So in Netheads this week, I had two sites I wanted to talk about. The first was for a computer game version of the card game Race for the Galaxy. I think I've talked about Race for the Galaxy on one of the previous podcasts, but to catch everybody up, it is a card-based game in which you play a civilization attempting to basically colonize the galaxy. You're trying to get the largest number of points by doing any number of different strategies. Some of those may be researching alien technology, researching biotechnology, exploiting mineral resources, creating the next great consumer game, or maybe just conquering the galaxy through military might. It's a really cool game, and it's one of the go-to games for my gaming group right now. If we're not playing RPGs, there's a good chance that Race for the Galaxy will come up. And with this game that I'm talking about now is fan-generated, and it's written in Java for Mac and PC, and it's based on the first, I think it's up to 4 expansions for the game. It's fun, but I will warn you that it is very, very difficult, and I think you're going to want to have to understand how to play the paper paper version before you actually try and play this one. Now, one of the criticisms of Race for the Galaxy is that it's basically group solitaire. The reason for that is because really, unlike your Euro-style games, there's not a lot of collaboration going on here. Okay, well, actually, there's no collaboration going on here. You're not trading cards. You might occasionally strategize with somebody, but honestly, it's pretty much every man for themselves, and what you do doesn't really directly impact somebody else unless you're maybe going for the same goals and thus can't get the same card. The PC version of this game basically really drives home that feel. I think it's really best for experimenting with different strategies, kind of seeing how cards come up, getting a feel for the timing of the game. I played a heck out of it for probably about 2 weeks, but after that, I really missed kind of hanging out with my friends and playing the game. Because like I say, while it's not very social, there's always something to be said for having other human beings in the room. So it is a cool game. I think it's worth checking out, particularly if you like Race for the Galaxy. You can find it by going to www.keldin.net/RFTG. There'll be a link in the show notes. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk about in Netheads was Mutant Future, which is an old school take on Gamma World by the guys who did Labyrinth Lord. If you like your post-apocalyptic fiction with hyper-intelligent carrots and quest for mystical artifacts of a bygone age, like, say, a ballpoint pen, then this is your game. It's a free PDF that you can download. I believe they've released a couple of expansions for it into forms of modules, that kind of thing. It's fun. I haven't actually had a chance to play it yet, but, you know, if nothing else, it's a great kind of stroll down memory lane, and if you're into old school games, this is well worth checking out. You can find it at www.goblinoidgames.com/mutantfuture.htm, and as always, the links will be in the show notes.
This woman like bees, Sarge. I don't think we're gonna make it.
Damn it, Bukowski. Keep your head together. We're gonna win that hill if it's the last thing we do.
Sorry, Sarge. I just don't know what to do.
What? Why not? Didn't you listen to the Accidental Survivors podcast?
You mean the podcast about modern tabletop role-playing games and related media topics?
Yeah, the one put together by the Swords Edge publishing guys.
Sorry, Sarge. I didn't.
Sorry I'm late. I was listening to the Accidental Survivors podcast, and then I went and sabotaged the enemy lines.
Logan, you beautiful bastard!
Let's go take that hill, men.
The Accidental Survivors Podcast, a podcast about modern tabletop role-playing systems and related topics. Visit us at the web at accidentalsurvivors.libsyn.com.
Give my daughter a call sometime, Logan.
So there you have it, folks. The first Nuketown Radioactive in almost a year. As always, I am looking for feedback. In fact, feedback would make sure that you get another episode of the podcast. You can contact me at nuketown@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at www.twitter.com/nukavik. And, well, yeah, you could reach me on Skype. My username there is Nuketown, but I got to be honest, I'm not really on Skype all that much. Your best way to reach me is really email and Twitter. With any luck, I'll be talking to you all again real soon. Until then, have a good life and have fun.